We're going to start on Acts chapter 16 and page 260 of our textbook, Handbook of Religions, McDowell, copyright 2003. We'll see how far we get today, but I expect we'll cover pages 260 to 264. And let's start out by reading the book of Acts, chapter number 16 and verse number 16. As we were going to the place of prayer, now the context is Philippi. Philippi is not Turkey. So we get used to saying, oh, that's a town in Turkey. Oh, that's a town in Turkey. Oh, that's a town in Turkey. This is not a town in Turkey. This is across that body of water known as the Aegean Sea. You have Turkey over here, and right over here you have the Macedonian Peninsula. Okay, and what is the next peninsula to the west?
Siberian.
I hope not. Huh? What'd you think? Yeah. Huh?
Iberian
Peninsula. I was thinking something that looked more like a boot.
Sicilian?
Yeah. Sicilian. I hope so. Isn't that the next one over? Let's take a look. Let's see here. Pretty sure that these, and I'm afraid I have a cheat map right here. Across the Aegean Sea is the Macedonia Peninsula, and you have Corinth and Achaia, and Philippi is in what is now known as Macedonia. But the ultimate cheat part of your Bible is the maps in the back. And sometimes you can get a little help that way by looking at the Mediterranean Sea. And let's just see if Mr. Stern forgot a peninsula. It's possible. It's quite possible. Since I've lived in the Mediterranean once, I was on the island of Cyprus in 2003, and it wasn't to check out the beaches. So let's see here. Yeah, it is Italy. And the question is, would they call that a peninsula? I sure hope so, because that's what it is. But between Turkey and the Macedonian Peninsula is the Aegean Sea, and between the Macedonian Peninsula and Italy is the Adriatic Sea. How many of you have been through a specialized geography class before, and you knew all that already?
Well, I forgot. 1/16.
Huh?
I was in a geography class.
Yes, I was too. I remember in junior high I was somehow able to pop off with all of the countries and capitals of Africa, South America. Pretty wild. Yeah, that's a pretty easy one to know, the capital of Djibouti. Yes. Thanks for nothing. All that help you gave us. Let's see. I think we had all of the state capitals and nicknames too, I think we had those. So anyway, but what we didn't cover, I wish we would have, was all the little bodies of water in all the continents. That would have been pretty cool. But anyway, you learn those things as you move along through church history. And last year we had to learn about the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. You probably forgot it all, right? But what country is between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea?
Armenia.
See this guy. This guy right here, huh? You remember that?
Well,
you remember so who's the patron saint of Armenia then, brother?
Saint Sturmius?
Ah! No, that would be a great answer. That's Fulda. Saint Sturmius. Gregory. Gregory the Eliminator. Not the Eliminator. He wasn't a car racer. Whatever. So Acts 16. Look at verse number 16. As we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a slave girl who had a spirit of divination and brought her owners much gain by fortune telling. So this is a what? A mix between a what and a what?
A spirit is no necromancer.
Those are probably the same thing.
A spiritist
and an astrologer, a fortune teller, right? She followed Paul and us, crying out, "These men are servants of the Most High God who proclaim to you the way of salvation." Oddly enough, to Paul and us, who were the us? We know of at least two people that are part of the us from this chapter. Since it's a first person, even though it's first person plural. Paul is not part of the us because it is Paul and us. Silas, we know that from the next paragraph. Paul and Silas are in jail together. But who is another part of the us? Stop guessing. Part of the us. Us means it's in a certain first person. We know it's first person plural. Luke, thank you. Crying out loud. All right, so if we go from he to us, that means that Luke is now with him. So somewhere along the line, Luke got on the boat, okay? And so this woman starts crying out, "These men are servants of the Most High God who proclaim to you the way of salvation." And this she kept doing for many days. Many days. Paul, having become greatly annoyed, turned and said to the Spirit, I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And it came out of her that very hour. Justin, next verse.
But when her owners saw that their hope of gain was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them to the marketplace before the rulers.
All right, Zach.
And when they had brought them to the magistrates, they said, these men are Jews, and they are disturbing our city.
They're advocating customs that are not lawful for us as Romans to accept or practice. This is the bottom line. Verse 23, they were inflicted many blows, and many, many beatings were placed upon Paul and Silas, and it all came down to them trying to deliver a woman of a spirit. Well, on page 260 of our book, we're starting to deal with the old religion, it says, top of page 260. It is witchcraft. And you might notice witchcraft is related to the old English word witchian, practice of magical arts. What do you think that word is related to? Come on, look at the word.
Magician.
Look at the word of the old English word. Look at the old English word that it says it's coming from.
Witchian.
Look how it's spelled. Come on, folks. This is not hard. You haven't been living under a bed without a newspaper for the last 20 years, have you?
Wish?
How about? Does it look anything like that? Oh, holy cow. So all of a sudden you realize that Wicca is a religion that deals primarily with witches. So,
not really. Witches love the earth.
Whatever. Okay. It's a word you pick that is related to religion having to do with witches. So, typically, by the way, you understand that when you meet a person in America who has some sort of nifty, far-out religion, typically they're nominal. In other words, it looks really good on their MySpace profile, but that's about it. All right, like MySpace. Who has that anymore? That's my point. They're so far behind that they use words they're not sure what they mean. Yeah, I'm pagan. Whatever. No, you're not. You saw that on a video game. You thought it sounded cool, and now you can't stand your parents' Baptist church, and so now you're pagan. Right, whatever. There's this E7 in a unit that I have in Kentucky, and she said, this is pretty funny. This is November. I said, by the way, she's a psychology master's student, and she is, so I call her and talk to her a little bit about religion, and she's, oh, I'm Buddhist. Now, this girl's as white as me, okay? So right away, it doesn't mean that a white person can't be Buddhist, but right away, I have to tell you, I'm thinking, I have my doubts. I thought this might be one of those things where she's doing some reading in her troubled times, and all of a sudden she thought, man, that sounds really cool. They look peaceful. They plant little strange Japanese-type plants and trim them weirdly. This is probably very good. And then from that moment on, she claimed to be Buddhist. I mean, Harrison Ford, right? So it must be a good thing to be Buddhist. Harrison Ford, Han Solo's a Buddhist! It must be right! Anyway, so I went back a couple weeks ago when I was gone. You know, Mrs. Stern was in here taking care of your quiz and all that. Remember that? And I was down there, and I spoke to the soldier, and I started talking a little bit because I do some reading here and there. And I said, you know, I was doing some reading the other day. I had no idea that Zen Buddhism was an offshoot of Mahayana. That is so weird. Right? I was really just popping off this thing, trying to start a conversation to get it over to the gospel. She said, whoa, you're speaking way over my head, chaplain. You obviously know more about this than I do. All right, so you know what I just found? I just found someone who just loves the comic books but has no idea about the religion, right? I think he's fat. Isn't Buddha fat? You know, you must be a Buddhist. Okay, no. So there's a good chance that when you meet someone that says, I'm Wiccan, really what they're trying to say is, I'm not Christian at all. And I don't think being Jewish looks fun either. And Muslims, they do bad things. So I'm Wiccan. That's what's left. I'm Wiccan. That's usually what they mean by that. And I like nature. I want to have church in the woods. So I'm Wicca. All right? That's usually what they mean. But bottom of the page, witches are usually organized into covens. The word coven dates from about 1500 and is a variation of the word convent. Well, what does convent sound like?
Convention.
What? No, it does not. What religion does it sound like?
Catholic.
So in the 1500s, What are the witches trying to distance themselves from?
The Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church. Maybe nuns? I have no idea.
Nuns are part of the Catholic Church.
That's true, but what's spooky about a woman in a gown, all right? Well, I guess it depends on who we're talking about, how old she is. But I understand why you have, I understand the whole convent to coven thing. You don't want to be known as being a part of a convent of witches. That could really confuse people. So we're a part of a coven of witches. All right. So you talk about I'm part of the coven in Fayetteville. It sounds really cool. It means they're part of a group of witches in Fayetteville. All right. Next page, 261, second paragraph. Let's talk about Halloween a little bit. The origin of Halloween goes back 2,000 years before the days of Christianity to the practice of the ancient Druids in Britain, France, Germany, and the Celtic countries. Britain? How did Christianity get to Britain, Daniel? Don't look at me with that tone of voice. How about you, Zach? What do you learn? What was the best? Remember, we only had Miss Wigan teach two classes the entire year. This is one of them. How Christianity got to Britain. We have a good theory.
Oh,
okay. Oh, this is going to be amazing. I can't wait to hear it. But anyway, while he's thinking about the answer, because he ain't going to get any help from the vice over here, we're going to remind ourselves that witchcraft predates the migration of Christianity. We know that they had a couple of representatives at the what of what in 314. No, that was 325.
No,
okay, so anyways.
No.
Milan. Council of Milan, 314. Right? So, the Edict of Milan is 313. The Council of what? 314. Now you're killing me. But we believe that Christianity, you can't say that on the recording, we believe that Christianity was brought to Britain by Joseph of Arimathea, right? Maybe 12 or 13 years after Jesus went back to heaven. In any case, witchcraft predates that in Britain. By the way, so we're saying Christianity got to Britain by the first century, all right? Believe it or not. And that was made possible because of what amazing empire that was already there.
I don't know.
May I guess?
The only empire going on at the time, really.
Persian.
English.
The English Empire in the first century? Wait till I talk to your history teacher. The Roman Empire is still around. Yowzers. All right. Man. So anyways, I'm sorry, listeners. So, all right, so we have the... I need to delete that. All right, so 2,000 years before the days of Christianity, a practice of the ancient Druids in Britain, France, Germany, and the Celtic country. You say Celtic, you're proving you don't know how to speak Latin. It's Celtic, all right? The celebrations honored their god, Samhain, Lord of the Dead. If we were talking about a Greek Lord of the Dead, what word would we use? Hades, yes. Give that man a cookie. Good job. Someone, cookie. Now, come on, Daniel. He's bailed you out. Cookie.
On the computer?
All right, never mind. Yeah. No, not that kind of cookie. You yelled at for that stuff. All right, so, all right. Look at the second paragraph. The time of the leaves seemed an appropriate time to celebrate death. Why? They're all dying. All the leaves are dying. They're falling to the ground. Which is exactly what Halloween was to them, a celebration of death, honoring the god of the dead. The Druids believed that on that particular evening, the spirits of the dead returned to their former homes to visit the living. The living did not provide food for those evil spirits. All types of terrible things would happen to the living. So, really what you want to get down to is the fourth paragraph. Before the introduction of Christianity to these lands, the celebration of death was not called Halloween. Halloween is a form of the designation of All Hallows' Eve, a holy evening instituted by the church to honor all the saints of the Christian history. So, again, as we learned last year in church history, part of making Christianity more palatable to the then very pagan Roman Empire was to take some of those fixings, those accoutrements, those ordinances of the Roman government, and giving them kind of a churchy appearance. And so instead of pagan temples, we started building church buildings. Instead of celebrating, you know, the god of Ishtar, we started following Easter. Instead of dealing with the sun god, we started having Christmas. And instead of celebrating the death of, in honor of the god of the dead, then the church started All Hallows' Eve or All Saints' Day to celebrate the death and the life of saints. So you need to ask yourself on such and such a day, am I interested in taking part in a holiday that celebrates the God of the dead? You have to ask yourself that. You have to think, do I have a good reason for doing this? Remember, the litmus test is not, does my church do it? Who cares if your church does it? That doesn't mean it's right. The question is not, do my parents allow me to do it? Who cares if your parents allow you to do it? There's going to come a day when you're going to have to decide whether or not something is right enough to do it with or without your parents' permission. You know, if they say you cannot do something and you're living in their house, well, that's pretty clear. But most of the time, parents are interested in not getting on your wrong side, and so they allow you to do things that are not good for you, and sometimes they don't even have a conviction to think that it's not good for you. But I'm going to tell you, when you visit someone's house, all right, you typically alone. The whole trick-or-treat thing came from this, right? Because if that spirit came to your house and there was no treat waiting for them, bad things would happen. See, so it's all about when they come to your door, the idea is trick-or-treat. Well, if you don't have something for them, the visitation from the world of the dead, well, then you are going to be tricked. Okay, there's going to be bad things happening to you if you don't have a treat for the spirit of the dead one returning to your home. That idea. So, just so you know what that little guy in the He-Man outfit is really saying to you, okay? All right, so, yeah. Now, there's all kinds of people in your life that'll say, oh, it sounds stupid. Or, Isaiah, I just quit blowing it out of proportion. Right. The problem is, not that we spend too much time not doing things. Really, think about your church. Think about the people you know in your church. Think about the people you sit next to in your church. They're not busy not doing things out of conviction. They're busy blowing things off. So we don't have this sort of problem in our churches of we just don't do anything because we don't think it's right. We don't have that problem in our churches. Come on, seriously. We have opposite problem. We don't find anything wrong with anything. We find excuses to do just about anything.
Well, we're going to celebrate Reformation Day, just so we can get candy.
That's very nice. Very nice, but it's lame, okay? So you're going to have to, at some point, decide whether or not something is holy enough to do it. Page 262. Now let's talk about this whole witch hunt idea. Page 262, first full paragraph. There were two significant events that occurred. Really got the witch hunt started in the 1400s. The first was a papal letter. That means something to do with the papacy, okay? And it's known as a bull. So when the Pope puts out an authoritative writing, it's called a bull, okay? Issued on December 5th, 1484. It was Pope Innocent VIII, which instituted the beginning of its official action against suspected witches. And so what would you do? Well, he granted men who were responsible for punishing witches. They were known as inquisitors. And here's some of the things that the bull included. Look at one paragraph down. The Pope Innocent VIII said, "It has recently come to our attention, not without bitter sorrow, that in some parts of northern Germany, many persons of the Catholic faith have abused themselves with devils. And by their incantations, spells, conjurations, and other accursed superstitions and horrid charms, enormities and offenses, destroy the offspring of women and the young of cattle, blast and eradicate the fruits of the earth, the grapes of the vine, and the fruits of trees." How are they doing this again? How are they affecting newborn babies and cattle and vegetation? With devils. And what do you think those things came in the form of in that time? Yes, but what do we call these things? I remember they're saying that, what? Spells, thank you. Yep. Spells. So the Catholic Church believed that there was demonic activity actually causing harm to newborn babies, newborn cattle, fruits and vegetables, and all such other things. And they believed it was something to do with people's involvement with witchcraft. Okay. When a person became a witch, he or she entered into a pact with Satan to worship him. In making this covenant with the devil, the initiate promised to serve him as Christian promised to serve Christ. Moreover, Satanists had their own liturgy, which was a parody of the liturgy said by Roman Catholics. So, in other words, again, the Pope is saying that Satanists do exactly what Christians do, except they do it towards Satan. Look at page 263. Halfway down the page, another writer described a witch in the following manner. Forgive me. Witches are those who, because of the magnitude of their crimes, are commonly called malefici or malefici or devil evildoers. These witches, by the permission of God, agitate the elements and disturb the minds of men less trusting in God. There they are. They have the ability to affect the mind. What would we call that? Not a curse, but or a spell, but
a hex.
A hex. Very good. Yes, or very bad. Okay, whichever the case may be. Your answer is correct. That's what I mean to say. Bottom of the page, beginning with, furthermore, the wretches afflict and torment men and women, beasts of burden, herd beasts, as well as cattle of all other kinds, with pain and disease, both internal and external. They hinder men from generating and women from conceiving. Whence neither husbands with their wives nor wives of the husbands can perform the sexual act. Well, that is a problem. Now all of a sudden a witch can reach into your home and wish that you and your wife are irritated with each other on more than one level. All right. Above and beyond this, they blasphemously renounce that faith which they receive by the sacrament of baptism. Remember, this is the writing of a Catholic during the reign of Elizabeth I, Elizabeth I, top of page 263. Turn the page, 264. This papal bull by Pope Innocent VIII, along with the publication of Malleus Maleficarum, led to a witch panic and a 300-year nightmare. People were seeing witches everywhere. Those accused of being witches had little or no defense against their accusers. During this period, more than 100,000 people in every European 100,000 people in every European state were executed for supposedly being witches. The brutal methods of the inquisitors is summed up by Robbins. The accused were presumably guilty until he had proven his innocence. The Inquisition adopted this pivot of Roman imperial law. But in matters of belief, vindication is almost impossible. Number four, just picking a few out for you to see. Witnesses were not identified. In other words, your accusers were not made known to you. Because two generations earlier, Pope Innocent granted accusers anonymity. Well, that's a real problem, isn't it? You are being accused of being a witch. Who said? Can't tell you. And typically, look at look at number five. Witnesses disallowed in other offenses were encouraged to inform against heretics, convicted perjurers, persons without civil rights, children of tender years, and excommunicates. Basically, if you were not allowed to be in any other court for any other reason as a witness, you could actually accuse someone of being a witch and it was okay. Number seven, the accused was permitted no counsel, since the lawyer would thereby be guilty of defending heresy. So it really sounds like if you want to get someone killed, you just accuse them of being a witch. And by the way, number ten, technically allowed only as a last resort, the practice of torture was regularly used and could be inflicted on any witness. Civil authorities employed torture, but the Inquisition extended and systemized its use. Torture had been sanctioned as a means to discover heresy by Pope Innocent IV in 1257. And all of this information, for the most part, is from the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft and Demonology by R.H. Robbins, published in 1959. Wow.
Is witchcraft the same as wizardry?
I don't know, technically. It sure does seem like they have a lot in common, though, doesn't it? So, we want to make sure that we are understanding that this is not to give you a pro or a con on the witch trials. I mean, when you lose 100,000 people to accusations that cannot be cross-examined, that is obviously a blight on justice. No question about it. And this is not a class on Catholicism. We'll get to that in May. But the Catholic Church had a problem of its own. Okay? Serious issues of its own. If you can imagine anyone who says that they're converted in the heart, inflicting pain on someone to get them to confess, only so that you can get them a lesser execution that's just a tad less painful, we have real problems. Remember Savonarola? Remember we talked with him last year? In the 1400s, he was executed by the Borgia family, and I'm telling you, that was just crazy. Crazy amounts of bad things were done by the Roman Catholic Church during the second millennium AD. Bad things. And just when you thought that the Protestants learned their lesson, they really didn't. They just became the state churches of other countries. For example, what became the Church of Germany? was the Lutheran church. Did they put up with other people who didn't agree with them? No. What became the state church of Geneva, of Switzerland? Presbyterianism, Calvinism. Did they put up with people to come? No, they did not. If you went and got rebaptized, they gave you your third baptism by drowning you in the river. You're not allowed to have another baptism. You got baptized when you were a baby. That's enough. So it's not like the Catholics were the only ones who killed people who didn't agree with them. It just so happens they get the most fame for it. Then, of course, on America, on the western side of the Atlantic Ocean, you need to just take a trip to Boston in the 1600s, and you see people that are not Anglican being persecuted, and then people that are not congregational being persecuted because they're not a part of them. The only difference is it was a different state church over here. You never find a good end when you make people believe something, ever. Roger Williams knew that. The Catholics figured it out. So if you were in charge of America for a day, would you outlaw witchcraft?